Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's say hello to our college football insider, Coach Gary Barnett. Coach, good morning. How are you?
How about you guys?
Doing very well. Waiting for the playoffs to begin Saturday afternoon at Arrowhead Stadium. The Chiefs, Coach, I don't know if you're aware of this, but they have a chance to win their first home playoff game since Joe Montana led the Chiefs to an overtime victory over the Steelers following the 1993 season.
Wow. I think right. I saw that game.
Yo, yeah, it was a hell of a game. I was there, and I've been waiting patiently for the next home playoff win, Coach. So I think it's going to happen on Saturday. They're going to beat Tennessee. And everyone
good
will be
stuff.
Happy. That's
good
right.
Stuff for Kansas City.
Now, and we had a chance to watch the rookie quarterback Patrick Mahomes get his first start, playing against a lot of backups, but playing with a lot of backups. And he got a win at Denver against the Broncos. And it was interesting to hear Aqib Talib make some comments after that game about how impressed he was with Patrick Mahomes, had an AK-47 for an arm and everything else. And so that was nice to see. But obviously, this is Alex Smith's team. And he will be the man to lead the Chiefs into the playoffs and hopefully take them farther than they've been in a long, long time. But on the topic of quarterbacks, I wanted to ask you about a couple of guys that officially declared for the NFL draft last night. First, it was Josh Rosen who made it official. And then it seemed like minutes after that, Sam Darnold declared for the draft. I don't think either of those were total surprises. But now they'll be compared, USC against UCLA, who's going to be the number one overall pick, who's going to be the better pro. So I'd just like to start there. You've seen plenty of these two in the Pac-12. What do you think of the pro prospects for Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen?
You know, I think for the future, they're both great prospects. I think that they're both going to be good players in the NFL. They both have, I think, what it takes. Are they sudden impact players next year? I'm not sure whether they are or not. I think physically, I think Sam Darnold probably is. But I don't think after watching him play this year and seeing him make the mistakes he made this year, I don't know you're going to fix that in 1 year. But I think down the road, he may be the very best prospect. Rosen is probably a little more ready right now than Darnold, but physically, he's just got a, you know, he's pretty frail right now, and he's, you know, the last 2 years he's been hurt, and I think that's an issue. The issue is that position is so critical in the NFL, and it's so hard to find just the right one. That, you know, it's got to be the first guy you go after. It didn't used to be that way, but it is now. And so these two guys, I do think they're both really good prospects. You know, Rosen is really a cerebral guy. He knows protections. He seems to know defenses maybe a little better than Darnold does, although that's probably an unfair statement. Either one of them, because not being in the room with them and not really knowing, it's just from my appearance. I know that when we played UCLA and brought a lot of pressure, he always knew where to go, and he always made the defense pay for whatever mistake they would make. Darnold, on the other hand, would beat you with his big arm. He would beat you running the football occasionally. He would beat you by being able to get out of a sack and make a play. So they beat you different ways, but nonetheless, they beat you. And so I think both, like I said, are good prospects. I think they're both going to be great pros. Whether or not they're ready right now, I'm not sure. That's up for somebody else who's paying a lot of money to make that decision.
You know, and you talk about that decision. I'm fascinated to watch what happens with the Browns, because John Dorsey, the former GM of the Chiefs, has taken over with the Cleveland Browns, and it's his decision to make. But they have the number one overall pick, and they have the number four overall pick. I think they have five picks in the first two rounds. and they need everything. And I've seen two arguments. One, take the quarterback that you like the most, number one overall, and then at number four, you know, best player available. Other people have said that maybe there's just not one quarterback that stands out. I know you like Darnold, but really stands out and has separated themselves. And so the best player is Saquon Barkley. Take him number one and then just go with whatever quarterback is available at number four if you want to go quarterback, because there are other guys like Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson that are projected to be first-round draft picks. Do you like Saquon Barkley enough to where you would consider taking him number one overall and just going with whatever quarterback's available at number four? Is he that good of a prospect, or do you still stick with quarterback at number one because that's the most important position?
Well, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Whether Barkley is the very best player available in the draft, you know, gosh, I'd be stepping outside my boundaries to say that. I could easily agree, sitting around having a cup of coffee or something, but I don't have really thorough knowledge of that. But I think the idea behind it makes a lot of sense because, you know, how much difference is there between Rosen and Darnold? I'm not sure. But they need a lot of help everywhere. And making the move, taking the very best player that's available in the draft seems to make a lot of sense to me. And if that's Barkley, go for it. I mean, I'm not sure defensively, you know, whether there's someone else out there or another skill player that's out there that's better than anybody. But I like your philosophy there. I like your thoughts.
Do you think Baker Mayfield is going to be a good NFL quarterback?
Oh, boy. That's a crapshoot. But I think he probably will be. Again, he's not an impact player. It depends on his maturity level. If he's more mature than Johnny Manziel, yes, I think he will be. If he's of the same level, then he'll be a burnout, but he won't have the patience to stay around and do it. But I think he's got a live arm. I think he's an inspirational player. I think it's you know, he's going to have to fit in the right system and get a chance maybe when somebody gets hurt and go in and do something. But I think he does have a really good chance of making it. I don't, you know, he's not one of those guys you're talking about that you take in the first four, five, six players taken in the draft. I think he's probably a second round guy, maybe a third round. But again, you know, quarterbacks are so critical that you're willing to use one in order to get somebody that can help you.
How would you evaluate his performance against Georgia?
You know, I thought he was, as everybody, you watched the start of that game, he was on fire. He was so good. And then the defense just beat him up eventually. And I thought third quarter, going into that fourth quarter, he was just a guy. I didn't think he made any difference. He was not able to get out of the rush. You know, I would think a couple times with his feet that he'd be able to escape and make some plays. But, I thought they did a good job of collapsing a pocket around him and not letting him outside. And, you know, he couldn't get away from anybody. He had a nice run early, but he could not get away from anybody. So, it was such a great game. How do you find anything wrong with that football game? Because both sides were playing so hard, and both sides were full of athletes, especially Georgia, that, you know, to me it wouldn't be fair to that game to say that anything was wrong with that football game.
So then, because I was about to ask you if you thought that there was any situation of Oklahoma mismanaging that game in the second half, or is it just down to Georgia making great adjustments in the second half of that game?
Yeah, well, it's probably a combination, Nate. I thought Oklahoma became a little bit passive in the second half. I thought they weren't as aggressive as they were early. And who knows? That's just as I sit there and watch it and not knowing anything about the game plan, not knowing anything about injuries or anything else, because so many things play into the decisions you make in the second half. But it did appear watching the game that they just weren't as sharp. But you got to give the other team credit. You know, they played the first half and survived it and said, you know what, I think this is the way we win this football game. And they went about doing it. So it was a heck of a football game, though. And like I said, how do you knock anybody in that football game?
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, as rough of a first half as the Georgia defense had,
yep,
in the second half, and I already liked him, but in the second half, I mean, I fell in love with Roquan Smith. And if you're talking about guys at the next level, if I'm watching that game, you know, and I've got a pick in the middle of the first round, I'm praying, and I need defense. I'm praying he falls to me. I loved the way he played in the second half. And that was, I mean, going into halftime, it just felt like, well, Georgia, there's nothing they can do to slow down Oklahoma. And they came out, and I don't know if it was adjustments, you give credit to Kirby Smart or guys like Roquan Smith who kept, you know, kept going at it and not giving up and playing with fire. But I was so impressed with the way Georgia found a way to get back in that game, because you couldn't have a worse first half as a defense than Georgia did, really.
Well, I agree, and I got to give Kirby Smart a lot of credit. I thought he coached a heck of a football game. I mean, he was on top of every single thing that happened out there. And, you know, you could just see the training that he's had under Nick. And I thought he coached a wonderful football game. I totally agree with you about Smith. What a football player. I mean, there's a guy that deserves a trophy, played the way he did. And he absolutely, I think, single-handedly almost turned around that second half. But, and again, jumping around in a game that was such a great football game to watch, how about the presence of the quarterback in a big situation like that? I mean, that freshman quarterback was dynamite. You know, you turn around and watch the next game, Alabama and Clemson, and you see the difference between Kelly Bryant and how he operated, and even Hurts and how Fromm operated. Fromm ran that offense. You know, he threw the ball where it was supposed to be thrown. He handled it really well for a freshman. So I thought the best quarterback on the field for the 2 days, for the two games, was probably Fromm, the most effective. I thought he was really good for a freshman.
No, I mean, unbelievable for a true freshman. And they made that point a couple times in the game. Just like last year, he's playing high school football, and here he is on the biggest stage going up against Oklahoma. And like you said, he was the better quarterback, especially in the second half. And so now we have this set up. I know a lot of people aren't very excited about an all-SEC national championship game, but the most interesting storyline is, like you said, you've got Nick Saban against his longtime assistant in Kirby Smart. And Nick Saban, when he goes up against his former assistants, he owns him. It hasn't been close. But I feel like there's just something different about Kirby Smart, and there's something different about this Georgia Bulldogs team. What do you think? What do you expect on Monday night?
You know, what do I want and what do I expect are probably two different things. I mean, we all want a great football game. We want a redo of the Oklahoma-Georgia game, and we might very well get it. I mean, these two teams are stacked with great athletes. I don't know if anybody realizes, really. Other than Clemson, I don't think there's two teams that have more great players on them than those two teams. And so we might have anything. Alabama haven't been in the city times, that it's hard for me to say that Alabama's not going to win this game and maybe control the game. But there are great players on that Georgia team, and the way they played the second half of that game the other day, and I want to give, you know, like I said, give Kirby Smart a lot of credit. They did a great job. So I think anything can happen. You know, there's this thing could be a great game. It could be a dud. Who knows? But it certainly has the makings of great players going after it, really good coaches going after it, and I sort of agree with Nick a little bit. You do need a little more time on a game like this, but you know, I don't think we can take it. I think we're just too eager to have it happen, and people got to get over the SEC having the dominance of this game. Let's just go watch the game for what it's going to be really about, and go from there. And So, you know, one of the facts I thought was really interesting was watching the Wisconsin game. You know, there were four players on the Wisconsin team that were four-star players, and they put this up as a graphic. There were 46 four-star players on the Miami team. And yet Wisconsin, who I thought played a great football game, and that quarterback had the game of his life, won the football game. So, you know, it's Wisconsin takes the Kansas State approach from that standpoint.
So, you know, I'm always struck by that. I don't like it as a college football fan that we have to wait for a month after the regular season's over before we get to these games in the first place. If Nick Saban doesn't like having 1 week, why don't they move the semifinal games up a week or two? And then you don't have that long layoff. You get a couple weeks to prepare for the semifinal game, and then you'd have a couple weeks to prepare for the final game. Why wouldn't they do that?
Well, I think it all goes back to originally with bowl games, they were played around New Year's. And the reason they were played around New Year's was because of school and, you know, consideration for the student athlete. They had finals, those sort of things. They could have time to be with their families, et cetera. But, you know, once the games have gotten as big as they are and they mean so much and so many facets to these games, betting and the money that's involved, that it's no one even considers that. And so I think that would be one thing that would be an issue is trying to, and I know it's one of those deals where you sort of say, yeah, student athletes, right. But it really is hard on those guys. And I think getting some physical rest is important after a season like that, getting beat up. So I think you want your guys at the very best that you can have them. And getting 2 weeks off or 3 weeks off to heal up is critical because they've just gone through a 14-game schedule. And I like the fact that they get time to, one, to prepare, because those games are critical, the games you're talking about moving up. Those games are critical. They're as critical as the championship game. So I like the idea of giving some time to the student-athlete to rest up, heal up, and get ready to play the game rather than being forced into it right away.
What do you think of Central Florida putting up a national title banner and throwing a parade for themselves?
Well, you know, they're not the first. Everybody, a lot of people have done it. So, it's the Bernie Sanders approach here. You know, more people that get rings and happier everybody is. So I don't have a problem with it. But until they figure out a way to do it differently, you know, you're going to have that. It's okay.
Were you surprised that they beat Auburn?
No. I thought Auburn had no chance in that game. Just the situation. Just absolutely the situation. And Scott Frost is going to be a national hero and should be in the collegiate ranks to do what he did. He held his word about staying with those kids. He's coached two teams. He did. If you're going to allow that sort of stuff to happen, then you got to have somebody that steps up and makes it work for both sides. And he did that, and he showed that it can be done. And I think you're going to see more of that in the future. And if you don't, then shame on those guys.
So I don't think I was irritated, but I know some Missouri fans were, of how that went because, you know, Scott Frost stayed and coached UCF, and clearly that benefited them. And they kept showing Josh Heupel cheering in up in a suite during the game, and you know I had one guy text me, why if Frost was staying to coach UCF, why couldn't Heupel stay and coach Missouri? Because guess what, they missed him. They elevated their tight ends coach who had never been an offensive coordinator for a game, and you tell me, I mean that's you could say that it doesn't matter, but I feel like it mattered. So if Frost stayed and coached UCF, why didn't Heupel stay and help Missouri get ready for that bowl game? Or do you think Barry Odom just said, you know what, you're the head coach somewhere else, time for you to go? What do you think happened?
Well, I think the big difference is Scott Frost was taking that entire staff with him. Josh Heupel was going to have to hire an entire staff. He brought the line coach, of course, from Missouri. Do I think it hurt him? Yeah, I think it hurt him. Was that game as big as the game that Scott Frost stayed to play in? No, it wasn't. I mean, that's just the way it is. So I understand both, and I'm sure if Barry would have insisted that Heupel stay, that he might have stayed. Who knows? I know when I left in exactly the same kind of scenario. Bill McCartney told me, you have got to go right now. You've got to find a staff. So I watched the blockbuster game from the press box in Miami as well. And Jerry DiNardo did the same thing when he left to go to Vanderbilt. We had the national championship to prepare for. And so that's when I got elevated to the coordinator for that game. And so, I think it just depends on whether or not you can hand the ball off to someone's capable. In my case, I handed the ball off to a guy who had been the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings to call a play. So, shoot, it seemed like it should be seamless. I think Bill McCartney thought it was going to be seamless going from Jerry to me as well. So, it just depends on the situation. But he had to find out an entire coaching staff. And you're so limited in time. You just don't feel like you can do both. In Josh's case, in Scott's case, completely different. He had a whole staff. He knew who they were. It was going to be a seamless move. So different situation.
Gary Barnett is our guest. All right, Coach. Rich Rodriguez is out at Arizona. There are names being thrown around like Kevin Sumlin and Butch Jones. And boy, the timing of this. I mean, you kind of feel for the players that just signed in that early signing period and committed to Arizona, and now the head coach they thought they were going to play for is gone right after that. But I'm just curious what you think about Arizona and the quality of job and the type of coach that Arizona might attract. It's going to be interesting in the state of Arizona. The Cardinals need a new coach. The Arizona State, they hired Herm Edwards, and now Arizona's looking for a coach kind of late in the game. What do you think?
Well, it just sort of tells you Arizona football. You know, I mean, it's just, they're so new on the scene, so to speak, that they really haven't established a real solid foundation that you can have all three change. You know, I think Arizona is the only school not to go to the Rose Bowl in the Pac-12. It's had a history of issues. But I think the landscape's changed a little bit now, and I think it's a pretty good job. I think those kids who signed with Arizona should have the right to leave Arizona with a firing this late and go somewhere else. I think they should be released from their scholarship. That's not going to happen, but I think that should happen. I think it's still it's a good job from the standpoint of coaching. You know, all your assistants can live close. You recruit Southern California. Arizona's full of good players, a lot of speed. So it's a pretty good recruiting base now for you. It's got a solid recruiting base. So I think it's a pretty good job. I think it's probably an ideal situation for Kevin Sumlin. I like that thought, and wouldn't be surprised to see it happen. But it's a good job, not a great job, but it could turn into a really good job.
I'm with you. I think Kevin Sumlin will be the number one guy on my list.
I agree.
Coaches that are available. All right, Coach, before we run out of time, I know we talked about the game, and you said you didn't know what to expect, but what is your official prediction for the national championship game on Monday?
Well, I just think it's too hard to beat those players at Alabama who've been on this stage so many times, and Nick Saban in a game like this. You know, if I'm betting, I'm betting on Nick, but probably like most Americans, I think we're all rooting for Georgia just because we like to see the king get upset. But I think Alabama's just because of experience and Nick Saban that they win the game. But I'm hoping it's just one of those great classic college football games. What I really love about it is that the two best defensive teams in the country are playing in this game. So it still means defense counts, and that's what I love about it.
Coach, thank you so much for the time. I'm with you. I'm rooting for Georgia. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, guys.
That is Gary Barnett, who joins us every week on the Border Patrol to talk college football. Would you go to the parade if you were down in Central Florida?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Why not? College basketball teams declare themselves national champions all the time, don't they? Like from the past, aren't there? Like,
okay, you've got two banners that were, you know, but I mean, look, I mean, you could say that every national championship in the history of college football has been a declared national right. champion. AP voted us. The coaches voted us. You know, there used to be split national titles because AP would vote for one, and you know, whatever. The USA Today would vote. Coaches would vote for the other. It's. I don't think there's ever been a true national champion in college football.
Never. They
had a computer formula, you know, decide who was in it for a while. Now they got 13 people picking it. It's. I think the whole system is a joke. So, you know, I've said my piece on it.
Right.
So you know what? If you're Central Florida, why not? Nobody beat you. You beat the school that beat the two teams that are in the final.
Right. Yeah, but then Auburn lost in the SEC championship game.
Yeah.
That was kind of important.
I think Alabama has a strikingly similar resume to what Kansas did the year that Kansas went to the Orange Bowl, so I guess Kansas should probably have gone in.
Really?
It's a pretty similar resume, if you think about it. Didn't win their division.
Did Alabama lose to Missouri?
They lost to Auburn. Who then lost in their conference championship game.
Right. Does the eye test tell you that there were similar teams?
No. Nope. I love the eye test, though. The eye test is awesome.
Well, I mean, you know, what else can you do for teams from different years?
I know.
Can make them play.
I know, but that's why Alabama gets in. They didn't win their own division, but they're in because of the eye test. And they'll probably win the national championship, so we'll
right.
be proven right.
Yeah, they hammered Clemson. Clemson was the defending champs.
Clemson lost to a 4-8 team this year.
Right. Do you think they're the national champions? Or do they have a claim?
Clemson?
The 4-8 team.
Is that Pittsburgh, I think, that beat them?
I thought, wasn't it Syracuse?
Syracuse beat them? I can't remember which 4-8 team beat them.
Right.
Pittsburgh beat somebody, didn't they?
I don't know. Their coach was heckling Louisville basketball fans. That's all I know about Pitt right now.
Well, their basketball coach,
right.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that sticks in my mind about Pitt. We will take a break back after this on WHP.